For the 23-24 season, Talking Wolves are proudly sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game.
Green King Sport venues are shown every single one of Wolves' televised fixtures over the course of the season. So instead of turning to the internet for a dodgy stream, why not get together with your mates, go to a Green King Sport venue and get closer to the action.
Now this season, Green King Sport have launched a Green King Sport Instagram page. It's home of the fan content, loads of giveaways and competitions on there. They've actually got a Champions League final tickets giveaway on there at the minute. Hopefully they're doing it next season because you might see Gary O'Neill's Wolf side in that, the way things are going. But there's loads of other prizes on there, signed shirts and much more.
So to make sure you're first to know about all the action over on the Green King Sport page, go and drop them a follow on their Instagram. And obviously you'll be helping us out here at Talking Wolves as well.
Hello and welcome back to the Talking Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cooper, and the squad is slowly getting back to full fitness. We've still got one major signing missing from the squad today, but welcome back, Jordan Russell. Jordan, how are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Coming live from different location today or different setup?
No, it's a different setup. I'm in between jobs at the moment, so I'm actually laptopless until tomorrow. So
you're actually topless.
Topless.
That's not a great place for your internet to lag, mate.
Laptopless. So I'm doing it off a phone. So it does look like I'm in a bunker basically, and this is like my plea to get me out. But I'm all good. I'm safe and sound, just in the loft.
Yeah. When any women listening on Apple and Spotify, they heard I'm topless, so I'd have been straight to the YouTube version, mate. That'd be straight on there. What have you been up to, mate? Feels like it's been a while. It's been a while.
Since I've seen you.
You had the charity game as well.
Charity game, yeah. I made some friends, let's say.
Or enemies. Depends who you ask.
Probably, you know, I don't think I've hit a football as hard in 10 years of my life, but you know, I'll take it, you know, it was a great highlight, but I did try and take the keeper's head off, if I'm being honest with you.
You nearly succeeded.
Yeah, I nearly did succeed. It's a shame really. It's good. It's obviously been nice few positive results for the Wolves as well, hasn't it? So it's I'm coming on to the pod to be really positive for a change, which might be a bit of a shock to people, but yeah, I'm in good spirits. Can't lie.
Bloody hell. Talking of positivity, Mr. Positive always, Mr. Glass Half Full, Dave Azzopardi. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, boys. How are we?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good. What's new? Anything? I saw you on Saturday night, I didn't know.
Why have we skipped over Jordan's stag do that we weren't invited to, by the way?
Because we weren't invited to it, so I couldn't give a fuck. Okay. That's why.
I did listen back to the podcast.
You went with your dad, didn't you?
To Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Me, my dad and Emma. That was it, yeah. I pressed the button on the glass, both sides.
And it was Emma behind it.
Like I say, it was a complete. I was saying to Dave at the LA Wolves thing. I found out literally that day, I think it was, at the LA Wolves event, because I put on LinkedIn I was leaving, and a chap was like, "Oh, looking forward to the stag," and I messaged him saying "stag?" question mark. And then that was it. And then my best man called me and was like, "Yeah, we're going on your stag next week." I was like, "Great." So I got. I can explain it all properly, but he's having his first kid in December, so he's been saying, we'll wait until the new year and we'll sort it out. And I was like, okay, no worries, not a problem. Because, you know, I thought he's got a lot on his plate with his first kid and whatever. And then him and Emma have sorted it behind my back and stuff. So I do apologise you weren't invited to it, but the plan was it would be in January and you were going to be invited, obviously. Oh. And you're obviously invited to a home stag we're having. And you can try and you can come to Antigua.
You play.
But no, definitely the party and stuff back here as well. So I do. I haven't spoken to Matt about it properly yet, but I want to wholeheartedly apologise, Matt. It was out of my hands. I apologise and I'm sorry.
Dave, it sounds like he's nailed his cover up.
He's had a week to
meticulous detail, isn't it?
Load of bollocks. Me and Dave spoke about it like at the Slug and Lettuce, didn't me and Wolvo. I was like, it's just all been thrown on. I thought I was going on a romantic break to wherever with Emma for a belated birthday present, and then ended up in Amsterdam and getting up to no good.
I've never actually been to Amsterdam.
I've been, it's all right. That's good.
Oh, I'm glad you had a good time. Thanks, George. I would have liked to have come.
Yeah. We'll go to Amsterdam if you want, Matt.
You ain't invited. I hold you in very high regard. I think a lot of you.
I hold you in regard. Yeah,
that's fine. And I was a little bit disappointed. I can't. I thought Dave was on the wind up. But you know, you soon learn who your mates are. But at least we can come to the wedding, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Coming to the wedding. Yeah.
Yeah. When's the wedding again?
27th of February.
Have you sent the invites out yet?
No,
it's in Antigua. We ain't gonna go to Antigua,
Dave. You know, Green King might send us.
No, and then the party's back home in Bridge North, and it's a lot more local. So,
we'll be there,
mate. We'll be there. Well, did you have a good time there? That's the most important thing.
I enjoyed 85% of it. Like I actually say, yeah, I loved 85% of it, and then 15% of it was just not
with
fun.
His dad.
just to clarify, my dad did not come.
He did all over your face.
Oh my god!
For anyone listening, there was the weekend that George was in Amsterdam. There was a viral story doing around glory hole activity, and you probably heard it between a daughter and a father. So there was a vicious rumor that this was Jord involved because it was a stag do and it was in Amsterdam. But yeah, Jord, can you confirm or deny whether that was you?
Well, I can confirm it was not me. And to my knowledge, my dad and Emma were in the Stourbridge region that day. To my knowledge,
God,
I don't think there's any glory holes in Stourbridge.
Let's not think about it, actually, because it's probably not a thought that you want to be, and it's probably not a thought that the listeners want to be here. Well, they may do, but anyway, Dave, me and you went for a few beers on Saturday night, didn't we? I had a few, and then went home and had a Mackey's to watch the Fury fight. But what time did you get home?
I got home about 5 a.m.
My God. What time was the plasterer coming?
Plasterer came to the new house 8:30. Oh, it was not good. So I got home. Was asleep till about 2 yesterday, and all yesterday I felt really worse for wear. Had a grillet though. I've actually had a grillet for tonight as well. I've had 2 grillets on the bounce. So again, Nanic sponsor if they're listening. But yeah, had a grillet pizza yesterday, a grillet chicken wrap tonight. So
yeah,
bash.
And did you? I know we spoke about it on the last podcast, but I think what everyone wants to know is: did you find yourself a cougar?
Not a cougar, no.
There you go.
Oh!
Found yourself a young pup, pod.
I love it.
All right, let's start the pod.
He shoots, he scores, he never misses. Anyway, let's talk about the football. I don't really want to. I'd love to hear more about this story, but I'm sure we can save that for the Patreon if ever we launch one. Wolves 2, Newcastle 2, George. And probably the most obvious scoreline from the from when the fixtures were released at the start of the season, because it always ends up this way.
Yeah, but they're usually quite a drab affairs at Molineux as well, and it was anything but a drab affair, to be honest with you. I thought it was two good footballing teams. I thought it was two good sides. Went for it, hammer and tongue. And you know what? I think it was a fair result as well. I know we'll go into the controversy of maybe a couple of the officiating decisions. Again, like we always seem to have to talk about on this podcast. But I just thought it was a well-thought, good game of football. And credit where credit's due. You know, I thought we played really well again. 5 unbeaten now. So it's onwards and upwards from there, really.
Dave, what were your initial thoughts on the performance? It's Molineux becoming somewhat of a fortress, isn't it? The atmosphere seems to be coming back, and it's actually quite a tough place for teams to go for what feels like quite a long time.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a cracking game of football. I did think, I felt the atmosphere was great. And at the end of the game, I thought as a neutral, this would have been a really good game to watch, I felt. So, but to go pretty much toe-to-toe over the last few weeks with 3 teams in City, Villa and Newcastle that are in European competition, I think just shows how far Wolves have come in such a short period of time. I think it was just 5 weeks ago when we lost to Ipswich, and people were like, oh, this Gary O'Neill, I just don't think it's the right decision. So things have very, very quickly changed. But then it's sort of games like next week against Sheffield United where really they're the games that we've got to be winning. But it's great, obviously great to get another positive result really at the weekend and a really good game of football.
Yeah, I think it's a slight anomaly, Joe, because Newcastle have got some big players out. But you can see, you know, there's still a good side. What Eddie Howe's done there, he's done a cracking job. I know they've spent quite a lot of money. But I thought, George, we've more than matched them, and probably the better side. And I think if you'd have looked at this game on paper for 4 or 5 weeks ago, you'd have been absolutely dreading it.
100%, yeah. I think, like I say, football's a very weird and wonderful sport, and momentum's a big thing. And like I say, after that Ipswich result, if we'd have been playing Newcastle home after that, you'd think we'd get a tonking. But you're right, look, they've got a few injuries at the moment. You could say they're a little bit jaded from the exerts of Dortmund in midweek, but I thought second half we looked like the only team really going to go on and win the game. I thought Newcastle started the game quite strongly that first sort of 20 minutes or so, playing through our lines, picking up balls in sort of like the half space in between the midfield and defence. And then Gary O'Neill changed it a little bit in terms of, it seems to be like, I think it was Joe Linton kept getting acres of space and Almiron inside, but then he got the centre-halves then to follow in the runners as well and sort of close that space. So in game, it was, you know, you could see he made those sort of tactical changes. But look, it was, I thought it was a real good, solid point. And you would have took that before the game. And I think we're just building something nicely now. It seems like the atmosphere is back. The fans are on side. It was great to have Molyneux under the lights again. And it just seems like we sort of getting back to, dare I say, a bit of like the Nuno-esque when we first come up. It feels like we can take anyone on at the moment. And, you know, it's great. That's what we're about and that's what we want to see.
Yeah, there was even like a couple of new chants going, weren't there? I know there was some fans were singing, "It's magic, you know, can you hang in there too?" Which
yeah.
I quite like, but it feels like forever that there's been like a new chant for somebody. But George, right there, the Wolves faithful are starting to be loud and proud again. And even without the contentious decisions, it seems that the atmosphere, I know it helps that everyone was probably pissed up before, he's starting to come back at Molyneux. But the goal that we first conceded, Dave, it's, I know George said we would have taken a point, but looking at the circumstances in the game, that sloppy goal to concede the penalty, that's not the penalty, probably, you know, should have come away with 3 points. But that first goal, do you think it's a foul, Dave, on Sarr, or do you think he needs to do better?
I've not really watched it back, the first goal, if I'm honest. I think obviously all the attention's been sort of on the penalty, but I felt at the time, I felt almost like the players stopped because I think they were half expecting a whistle. I think we mentioned it on the reaction that goalkeepers are very protected normally by referees. But yeah, I think if Sarr comes for that, he's got to hold on to it. And then obviously sort of Wilson puts it in the end. So I was half expecting VAR to sort of overturn it as well, but obviously nothing fell for us in terms of officiating. Nothing really fell for us in that game. So yeah, I think it's more poor goalkeeping really by Sarr.
Yeah, we say that goalkeepers are probably a little bit too overprotected, George. But if you know you're not going to get there, or you can get there and you're not confident of catching it, he's got to punch it or at least parry it away from danger.
100%. I said it on the fans react, like, it's just weak goalkeeping for me. Like, you've got a goalkeeper, all the good goalkeepers come out and just take everything in front of them. Wolves players, Newcastle players. And you know what? You catch the ball, you take them all out, and you know what? You probably get a foul, because like you say, the goalkeepers are overprotected in this league. He's gone to try and sort of claim the ball with his arms stretched out. So as soon as there's any contact on his elbows, the ball's just popped out. And you can't give Callum Wilson chances like that in the box. I mean, I think he still took it extremely well. I've watched it back, and I think he's actually took it. It's a harder chance than you think. Like sort of a, almost like a side bicycle kick or whatever you want to say it was. It wasn't quite an overhead kick. But yeah, I think, you know, for all Sarr's qualities, with shot stopping, he's still got that rick in him, which is, you know, I know me and you, Matt, have said it a few times on here, like not his biggest fans, but yeah, he needs to cut that out big time, because it will cost us points going through the season as well. You know, he's got one of them in him, probably one every four or five games, to be honest.
I think Gary O'Neill has said this about a few players, actually, where try and control those moments of madness and try and just be a little bit more consistent with what they're doing in the decision making. He said it about Saar, he said it about Aitnor, he said it about the back two as well, Dave. It's a shame, really, because I think in the last few weeks, Saar's been improved. Has improved. That's awful English. Yeah. Has improved.
No, I agree. And I think, again, that's one mistake. It's hard as a goalkeeper because a player or midfielder can make six or seven mistakes throughout a game and not get punished. But obviously, as a goalkeeper, you make one mistake and it's more than likely going to end up with the ball in the back of the net. So, yeah, I think, you know, he's not been awful this season. He's had a couple of great games. You know, the away win at Everton, I thought he was fantastic in. Manchester City, you know, their only goal came from, you know, a set piece, so we didn't concede an open play there. So look, he's not been awful, but we just got to obviously iron out these sort of individual errors. And it's frustrating, but again, the rest of the game, you know, we did what he needed to do, really.
Yeah, it wasn't long after that Wolves went up the other end, Jordan, scored direct from a corner, which Eddie Howe will probably be fuming with, considering the size of their back four and Joe Linton in the middle, but Lamina getting on the score sheet for the first time in a Wolves shirt, and it looked like it meant the world to him. But another assist for Neto, probably his last for a short while as well, frustratingly. I'll come to you, Dave. Sorry, he's having some technical difficulties. But yeah, it looked like it meant the world to him.
Yeah. I didn't realise it was his first goal, to be fair, in a Wolves shirt. And I can't remember the last time he scored directly off a corner either.
It's not very often that teams do.
No. So... yeah, to be fair, Neto, there was a few set pieces, wasn't there, where it was a little bit, I don't know, they were a little bit short almost. It was like Gian Martino was back on the corners again, but that one was perfect, you know, right, because, you know, right in the middle of the area, and thankfully it's found Lamina, it's a great header as well. But yeah, nice for Neto, obviously, to get another assist, and obviously great to see Lamina on the score sheet as well.
Yeah, I thought when Tommy Doyle came on, though, some of his deliveries were, he can't half whip a ball in, I tell you. Another impressive performance from him. But let's talk about that decision. I still cannot believe that they took that long to look at it on VAR and still give the incorrect decision. I had the luxury of actually watching it on the telly because I'd gone down at like 40 to get a beer and it showed it on the screen. And I was like, God, I can't believe they've given that man. That's a joke. I'll overturn that. And the longer it went on, I thought, they're going to give this. But Dave, it's just how many times are we going to have this conversation and how many times are we going to get an apology for it? It's an absolute shambles.
I wasn't surprised when he gave it initially because obviously he was sort of South Bank end. And I thought...
yeah, I get why he's giving it in.
I thought Wanger... it cocked it up, really. I thought I think his first touch wasn't great. He's got to clear it a lot sooner. And obviously, as he swung, play's gone down. But it took Anthony Taylor, you know, a few seconds before he put his lips to the whistle. But the players seemed adamant that, you know, it shouldn't have been a penalty. And obviously, when it goes to VAR, and I think the longer that went on, and I thought, well, it's obviously not as clear as, you know, the referee thought. But really, this is the blame of the VAR. I know Anthony Taylor got, you know, he didn't have a fantastic game, I don't think. But if in his mind, if he thinks it's a penalty, then yeah, it's a penalty. But then that's the job of the VAR to say, actually, Anthony, I think you've got this wrong. Do you want to go and have a look at it and just sort of put everyone's mind at rest that, you know, you agree with our decision? So the fact that it stood, I don't know, was it Jared Gillett on VAR?
Yeah.
Yeah, no surprise there again. So it's frustrated, and then you see all these sort of referee support pages. Well, what happens when all these players that make mistakes that cost their teams the game? And I said, well, that's one thing, but a goalkeeper doesn't get a chance to replay and make a save again. Whereas a referee, if he makes a mistake, he can go and correct it. So it's a load of rubbish, really. So frustrating, twice there, you know, where things just haven't quite gone our way. Obviously, the Saar incident, and then obviously this, and I think that's the third time now where, you know, we had the United game where we should have probably got something. Obviously, this game, there's another one I'm forgetting as well.
Luton, isn't it? They're talking about
the Luton game as well. You know, these are, I know it's not how football, you know, the game will change massively compared, you know, with whatever happens in these incidents, but Wolves genuinely could be 3 or 4 points better off than where they are at the moment.
Yeah, someone had put that in one of the questions. I'd actually worked it out, but I mean, even at the other end, the handball they checked, but neither are penalties. But George, how on earth can they look at that and not deem it clear and obvious? Because Wang's the contact's initiated by Shah. Wang kicks the ball with his left foot. He stops, and Shah kicks him in the back of the leg. And for some reason, it's a penalty. It's just pathetic.
I feel like I just berate refs on here, and I don't like doing it, to be honest with you. But they are fucking awful, and nothing changes. Nothing changes, and I agree with what you said, Dave. Like Anthony Taylor, I mean, I was in the Billy Wright upper. As soon as it happened in real time, you just think, oh, it's a penalty. But you're miles away. You ain't got a clue, really. My phone was going off like mad in the ground from people watching it at home. Albion fans are friends of mine and stuff, saying this is getting overturned. And the fact it went on for 3-4 minutes, I was like, well, I went with my dad and I said that, oh, it's going to get overturned here from what I'm being told. Obviously it didn't. And it was only when I got home, I actually watched it. And this is what I don't get with it, like VAR, because then you've got the on the flip of it, you've got the decision in the Manchester derby yesterday, which that happens probably every set piece. There's a pullback in the box.
Yeah,
and they're getting involved in that, saying that's clear and obvious. I don't know what the threshold is anymore. It really pisses me off. And again, like, I get annoyed with people saying, "Oh, the Premier League's corrupt. It's this, it's that." Because I want to believe that the game is quite pure, and you know, the best team wins on the day and stuff. But I'm finding it hard now in terms of, I do think there's an unconscious bias to these bigger sides. But there's no possible way that Jared Gillett has looked at that. I don't understand how it's up 3-4 minutes. They've looked at it in the VAR booth, shed, whatever they call it.
Shed,
whatever, you know. They've still deemed, oh, it's not clear and obvious to get involved. I'm sure, if there's all that to say was to Anthony Taylor, we think you should just go and have a look at it. Just have a look at it. Anthony Taylor would not have given that. If he watched that replay himself, he would not have given that penalty. Because he thinks that Quang's kicked through the back of Shaw, like a lot of people on the ground, in real time. In fact, he hasn't. He would have reversed the decision. I know he would have. But what happened from that point, though, then is Anthony Taylor completely lost the game. Like, he was a shambles for about 30 minutes after that. Both teams I thought he was bad for. I thought he was getting decisions wrong. He was listening to the crowd. There was a few Newcastle bookings where I don't really think there were bookings, but there was a few that got away with, which should have been bookings. And it was just like, the officiating in the Premier League is just so bad. For the best product in the world, the officiating's awful.
The booking shouts, especially in the second half, there was one where Cunha broke through, and I think it was Joe Linton pulled him back. And then he played the advantage. And the move broke down, and when the game stops, he didn't give a booking, and that's like the most clear yellow card of the game. Dan Byrne got away with 2 or 3 before his booking as well. So it's just that happens every game. The lack of consistency from the referees in terms of the bookings and stuff like that. I think the only one that I've seen sort of stick with it was Michael Oliver at Brighton right at the start of the season. I think it was Michael Oliver when Nunes got sent off as well. But other than that, it's just like, even when I gave him a talk to, but if someone's on the counter attack, he'd be pulled back. Like, that's just the most clear and obvious yellow card all game.
Trippier had about 7 or 8 fouls as well.
His tackle was poor as well. I think it was on Aitnori that the one he got the booking
bad
for.
Tackle.
It's a shambles, isn't it? And then you get the ref support and all these fucking morons on Twitter. And you know what? It's not a job that I want to do, and especially at like lower league levels, they must be like exposed to some levels of shit from dickhead parents who can't control themselves. But it's almost like a us versus them now, and it's like so petulant. Whereas if you got the decision right in the first place, you wouldn't need to make it all about you. You're there to referee the game. So frustrating, and they all say, "Well, have we ever?" What happens if a player makes a mistake? They're not held accountable if a manager makes a mistake. Well, they do post match interviews where they get quizzed on it more often than not. So why should that be any different? But it just winds me up.
The thing that I don't get is, and again, I think it's such a simple thing to do, is like, I mean, I don't like really drawing parallels between different sports. I know it's different, but like rugby union, cricket, NFL, like the referees are like wired up to the stadiums, and when they do like VAR or booth reviews or whatever, they're actually talking through the decision as it's happening. So you might not actually agree with the decision, but you're actually hearing the rationale of why they got to that decision.
You can
sort of go, you know what, you don't have to agree with everything, but if you understand why they've done it, okay, you go, well, okay, fair enough. You know, Anthony Taylor would have said, Huang's kicked through Shaw, and then they could have stopped it and just had an honest conversation. Like, you know, and I don't know how you do it, but other sports do it. And again, we're talking about football here, like the most played sport or most watched sport in the world, Premier League, the most watched league in the world. Why can't you just do it like that? I don't understand why you can't just talk through decisions.
It's not the technology that's wrong, though. Like, for me, VAR works. It's just the morons are in charge of it. And you're never going to eliminate human error. But the technology's there to assist you. So use it. So obviously just don't know or never played football before, because you look at that and we're not played to any great level, but we know that's not a penalty. So how can they take 4 or 5 minutes to look at it and then come to the decision that it is a penalty? It's just VAR works, just the people in charge of it. But sick of talking about it. I know Gary O'Neill said something in his post-match press conference about, I'm not going to give it my energy until they improve, which upset a load of referees on Twitter, but that doesn't take much. But Dave, do you want to talk about Totti Gomez slander and why it should no longer exist?
Mate, I never ever want to hear technical ability abused or, you know, on this podcast. I said it since, I was going to say day one, but I said it last season when all of you said he was a crap footballer. And now look, mate, I don't think anyone else on our team would have been able to do what he did there on Saturday.
No one would.
I reckon Scott would have probably had a go at that.
The turn from him was, you know, I think he's brave from a centre-half to try. You know, a lot of them, especially in those sort of forward areas, they just want to, like, almost like hot potato. Let's pass it over to someone who's probably a little bit better on the ball than me. But he showed quality there and then used, obviously, his body to sort of get the better of the defender. Smart little ball through, but obviously Huang still got a lot to do. And again, the issue with Huang sometimes is that he always likes to have like that extra touch in front of goal. He did it a couple of times, I think, against Bournemouth.
First half as well.
Yeah, where he almost tried to shift it onto his other foot, but that was brilliant. He sent Dan Burn to the Asda onto his left foot. And, you know, if you've got Huang versus a goalkeeper, you know, Huang's 9 times out of 10 going to put it in the back of the net. And that's what he did. And like I said on the review, I thought he had a quiet game in the first half, a little bit frustrating, struggled to get into the game a little bit more. But if you've got players like him in your squad that can just create and grab a goal out of pretty much nothing, then brilliant. And, you know, his goal scoring record already this season is phenomenal. So long may it continue, but brilliant. The atmosphere, I think we used one of the pictures for the tweet today, but some of the pictures of that move were class. You could just about see me in the top left of the one where he turns Dan Burn as well. So, fantastic goal. Really good goal.
I think Totti's probably seen the two players coming across too and thinks, if I just get my body in the way here, they're going to get absolutely nowhere near me. He's so strong though, isn't he?
Yeah.
I don't want to make it all about pace and power, but they are his main attributes. And it's a lovely little ball through, but like you said, Dave, Huang, it looks like he's going to take it on his right. Dan Burn ends up like, you know, the Shooting Stars meme. Goes absolutely flying with his hands up in the air. And it's a lovely finish, George. But yeah, he's banging form. Would you want to extend your apologies? Because I know the slander, you said Huang's had a first touch of a not very nice human. And that first touch there was exemplary.
I don't think I said that. It was bleeped out, I think.
Yeah.
maybe.
However, like I said, I've said it again a few times since. Like, I think since the World Cup, he's been unbelievable. Like, arguably our best player, I think. I mean, obviously, you know, from January, longevity of January to, you know, to now. I know Neto's been unbelievable this season. But as soon as he cut inside, I mean, yeah, it's an unbelievable finish. The composure. very reminiscent of when he sent Van Dijk for a hot dog when he's playing at Salzburg in the Champions League, and just, yeah, you know, just literally shift, bang. It's all one motion. I think when he's got to think about it, and again, when he with the penalty, inverted commas, the penalty, he was thinking about what he was doing, and he just sort of stopped. When he's playing on instinct, he's so good. He's as prolific as Dave has a party in Grainstore on a Saturday night. That's what we'll say.
If only it was Grainstore, mate. No.
Where was Cinderella's, it?
Mate.
Don't go.
You got the escargots.
Guess. I'll give you three guesses.
Dive bar.
I've told you, but I think I know.
You haven't. Dive bar.
What?
In Wolves. Probably the one place in Wolves you would never expect to see me.
See you.
Yeah.
Chicago's.
No, that's shut it down now.
That's shut.
Pop World.
Nah, delete the other one.
What?
Planet.
Planet.
You listen to the scores.
Yeah, they got my CEX license.
Where are you?
Tonight could be the night that I will fall for you.
What would you end up in there for?
Grainstore is ticketed event, so yeah, prolific, mate.
What is? I take it Planet's like a.
It is a bit proper, of a rock and roll, like. Yeah.
I bet you felt so out of place in there.
Yeah. I had someone call to me. I saw this lad from school. Genuinely, I had not seen him in over 10 years, and he goes, "Oh, he goes, what are you doing here?" He goes, "You do all the wall stuff now, don't you?" I was like, "Yeah." I just walked off. Then someone else was like, "I know you. Don't you do the videos? Why the hell are you here?" It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Oh God! The only sour note apart from the penalty decision was the Neto injury, Dave. And we just can't have nice things as Wolves fans, can we? As soon as he pulled up on hamstring, I think you said it was almost like a FIFA one where you're running for a goal and the player pulls up like the shot. But as soon as he did it, every Wolves player was stood there with his hands on his head, and the whole stadium went silent. It's a huge blow. He said he'd be a couple of weeks. He's since edited that post to say a few weeks, but it's not looking good, is it, Dave?
No. I've just seen Tom Colomossi from the Mail as well say, oh, he may be back for Christmas. I was like, what's going on
Which
here?
Christmas?
So, I mean, if he can be back by, you know, the other side of the international break, then great. But obviously it might be sort of, you know, early December, but it's obviously frustrating. You know, Wolves had a really promising counter like attack going on as well when the injury happened. I will be interested to see who steps up. I know we'll probably, you know, we'll have talk about it in a second when we do the Sheffield United preview, but be interested to see who steps up or if Gary O'Neill has to change things around slightly. But yeah, he'll be a huge miss. You know, the way his creativity, the way he's been able to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. Luton, perfect example. I thought he did the same against Bournemouth at times as well. So, yeah, it'll be a huge miss, really.
Mm. Before we move on to the Sheffield United preview, referee rating, George, out of 10?
Two.
Why not a one?
I think he was all right for about 20 minutes in the first half because he let the game go. I'm trying to be as
point for every
diplomatic as possible. Yeah. But then
to be honest, though, like the penalty decision, I can see why he's giving it, but it's not his fault.
That's
that he's
saying,
stood.
Yeah.
It's his mates at Stockley Park.
Yeah, it's his mates at Stockley Park. No shock, it's fucking Jared Gillett, the Aussie. He ain't got a fucking clue about football again. Not helping out. But no, like, I just think after that incident, he lost the game. You know, Anthony Taylor is meant to be one of the elite referees in England. He goes and does the European games. And again, just terrible, awful, awful official.
Roma fans don't like him, did I?
Yeah.
Add Wolves to that list. Yeah. Dave, referee rating?
Yeah, I'll go with a two as well.
Just one thing I want to touch upon, lads, and only very quickly, and it's been drawn to my attention the last two home games, is where I am in the North Bank, there's about three blokes who stand right to the barrier on the right-hand side, and they're all like in a row. And if you've ever been to Molineux around that area over the last 20, 25 years, you'll know I am about that. They're always up standing. They've always got the tops off. They're always trying to create an atmosphere. I used to sit in WL9 as a nipper, and they were there then in the old North Bank. And They don't cause anyone any problems. They try and get the atmosphere going. They're constantly singing, which I think we need more of. But the last two games, I've noticed that stewards and security officers have tried to eject them from the stadium, or threaten ejections, and bans. their argument is that it's not safe standing. If they want to go in safe standing, they need to go into the South Bank. Then you've got 3,000 Geordies in the steeple. It's arguably a less safe stand to stand in, or standing up. So I just think with stuff like that, common sense needs to prevail. If they're standing up in front of people, and they're blocking the view, I get it, it's annoying, but they're literally, from what I can see, they're not standing up in front of anyone, because they're literally right on the seats at the side. You're not blocking anyone's view. I just think sometimes just have a bit of common sense. I know I put it on Twitter and some people have said, good, they're annoying, they're too loud. I was like, what?
Too loud?
How can you? You're trying to drum up a bit of atmosphere. They literally sing their hearts out all game. They have the tops off, which, you know, it's not great to look at, I must admit, which they won't want me saying. But I just think sometimes just a bit of common sense. I don't.
It's hard, isn't it? I agree. I agree with you. But if there is an issue where I don't know what the issue can be, I don't know if it's not safe standing, like what can happen? They all tumble over each other, yeah. And.
But so Dave, I was going to say the quadrant in the North Bank's safe standing, isn't it? From memory.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I've got. I think it's jobs worth being jobs worth, isn't it? Ultimately.
Yeah, and like I get that they're just trying to do the job, but they've been there for years, and it's never been a problem, unless someone behind said, "Look, I can't see." Which, if that's the case, fair enough. But I don't think they have. And like I said, they're right to the side, so, and they all stand like one behind each other. You're still able to see, and the North Bank's that far over to the right hand side of the pitch. Even if you had someone in front of you, you're not looking that way. I don't know. I just think it's a bit poor. Supported that club for a long time, and they do the best to try and get the atmosphere going. And even the last couple of seasons when it's been dire, they've been singing their hearts out. So you've got people smoking in the bogs, in the toilets and stuff. And again, whatever people want to do, I don't care. But then to do stuff like that, I think it's an easy kind of thing to enforce, isn't it? I've had incidents involved where I've been smacked in the face in the North Bank by someone sat in front of me, and stewards didn't want to do anything. There were no retrospective action. So I just think it's a bit shit. I just wanted to get it off my chest, and hopefully I don't get bothered anymore. If someone from the club's listening, or no, they do, just, you know, use a bit of common sense, please. Not harming anyone. But Sheffield United, Wolves, I won't be making the trip. I've not done an away game this season.
Plastic, mate.
Proper plastic. Doyle ain't going to do an home game. unless Budweiser have paid for it.
Budweiser looked after me so far.
Budweiser season ticket.
Yeah, I've not done an away. And I ain't going to be able to get to a game for like 6 weeks. I'm having a needing on Monday, so I'll have to get to one in the new year. But Dave, Sheffield United, what point? 1 point on the board. Cocktail Sticks got more points than Sheffield United. You've probably heard that joke before. It's not a must win in terms of Wolves need to, where Wolves are at, but if they don't win this summit, these are the teams you need to be beating.
Yeah, for sure. We need the 3 points. Put us in a great position in the league. But yeah, they've been awful. You've not really heard much talk about, unless I'm missing it, about Heckenbottom losing his job.
The last week or so, meant to be under pressure, but I think they've said they're going to stick with him. They've obviously priced relegation into their thinking, though, haven't they? Because sold the best players. Barely spent any money.
1 point. I mean, they're 5 points adrift already. You know, they're in an awful position and conceding a lot of goals. I hope, you know, you'd hope. Wait, look, no game away from home in the Premier League is easy, and obviously they're desperate to win a, you know, win a football match, or at least get something out of the match. But you know, lost, you know. 9 games of football out of 10. You'd hope we've got the quality that we can, you know, break them down and hopefully get 3 points, which, you know, for us will be fantastic. You know, go possibly move into the top half with 3 points, which would be great.
Jordan, what would you do in terms of formation? Would you stick with a 5 at the back? Seems to be working for us at the minute, but O'Neill's got a bit of a selection headache now, hasn't he, with Neto out?
I know there's going to be clamours to go to a four because you'd be like, why do you need five at the back against a team who've got 1 point in the league? But it's all that system and how you set up and your intent of how you play in that system. We're far more comfortable in the back five. I would not move that back five. I'd obviously just push the wing backs higher up potentially. I'm a bit nervous about the game, if I'm honest with you. I think these are the games that we're struggling and will struggle in this season as well. Luton being another one. I know we didn't really turn up at all, really, in that game. But when we're expected to win and we're expected to go and be on the front foot and break teams down, we know we haven't really got those sort of... Well, we haven't really seen it that much in recent years that we can do that and break teams down. For me, I'd be starting Tommy Doyle because I think we're going to have a lot of the ball. And for me, I thought he was unbelievable again, second half when he came on against Newcastle.
Yeah.
Like playing for the Lions. You can tell he's like grown up in the Man City Academy, I think. He looks like an unbelievably technically gifted footballer. So definitely play Tommy Doyle. It'll just be interesting to see what he does for Neto because I think there'll be clamours for Kolarić from the off. For me, I'd go Bellegarde if he's fit. I don't think that Kolarić still has 90 in him. I'm not saying he would play 90, but I think O'Neill sees him as, you know, he's still come back from his ACL. And he's not as, you know, we almost lose that dynamism with playing Kolarić because he's not as mobile as Cunha, Neto and Hwang. And Bellegarde is. So I think without rocking the boat too much, I think that's the obvious change. And I think there's an argument for Sarabia as well, which I know will be unpopular. But again, if we're dominating the ball, you can get the ball in the half spaces, but again, you're losing that sort of dynamism of the front three a little bit if you bring him in. I'd just stick with the five and maybe make one or two changes.
Yeah, I think if you're gonna, if with Neto out the side, you can't put Kolarić in there. So at the weekend, I know it was fairly late on in the game, and the injury did take the stuffing out of us. But I thought bringing Kolarić on just like completely nullified us. Like our threat is that pace on the counter with them three, and it just didn't really work. I think Kolarić is all right if you want to look another dimension, but our strongest team is with those three pacey players up top.
I think the issue was though he changed system though, didn't he? After Neto came off, he went with like a 4-4-2 rather than the five at the back. So it meant Hwang was sitting a lot deeper and like Cunha was sitting a lot more central. I'd be interested. Bellegarde obviously wasn't even fit enough to be part of the squad this weekend. So is he going to be ready to start a game this weekend? You know, and after four or five weeks out of the team. Yeah, it's 5 weeks. Is he going to be able to come straight back in? So there's lots of options for Gary O'Neill. I think you could switch Cunha over to the wing and start Sasha or Fabio. Could you start Hwang and Cunha centrally and bring in Tommy Doyle, like George said, who I thought, again, was fantastic. I don't know if you... I think Roy Lanor is just offside, but you see that outside of the foot pass right at the end of the game, down the line. Fuck, it's just like the technique, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, he should have used his left, mate, if you ask me.
Or again, like George said, do you bring Sarabia back in? And it's hard because I think he does that, like you've said, Matt, lack that pace. But I think I would expect it to gain that we would dominate possession in, or at least, you know, sit in their final third quite a bit. And he has got that ability and quality to pick a pass and create a chance out of nothing. I know
it sounds silly, but Sarabia's really good in tight spaces, almost playing in between lines. Tommy Doyle's really good at finding players in those spaces. Could something, you know, in our wildest dreams, something like that happen? Because you see, like, even against Newcastle, you can see Tommy Doyle like slotting it in between players and picking out passes. Someone that we've not, I think, even Neves didn't really do it. Dave, think that could work?
Possibly. I very much doubt they both start the game together, but they could definitely be on the pitch at the same time. You know, we saw it for a little bit at the end of the Bournemouth game. Could happen again, but. The fact he brought Doyle on very, very quickly into that second half. And I think, like I said last week, in terms of pecking order now and priority of giving players minutes, Tommy Doyle's right up there. So he could start. It just really depends on what Gary O'Neill feels. You know, Sheffield United's threat is at the moment. They haven't got a lot. So I don't know, maybe it's hard because in terms of attacking numbers, you are restricted a little bit with going at the back with the back five. But it's just working. I don't think you can change that overall system, really.
I think you look more of a threat with the back five. So
I think what you could do, if you went sort of central, you brought Tommy Doyle in for Neto, you just rely on Aitnori and Semedo to create the space, you know. And
Aitnori's been playing, which is a left midfielder anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting. We'll see.
What a game he had again, by the way, at the weekend. Superb. Right, let's move on to the questions. So thank you for those who sent those in on Twitter. Avro has asked, if refereeing decisions had gone our way this season, we'd be 5 points better off with nothing else changed, putting up us into sixth place on 17 points. How realistic do you think a top table finishes this season? Could we get top eight? Mental, what a couple of wins and a couple of draws just for your confidence, isn't it? I still think we'll finish around 12th or 13th, Dave.
You don't know, do you? I think, obviously, there's teams still in around us at the moment. United, Chelsea, you would expect to improve quite drastically. I think we're capable, yes. And I think a good January window, we're very much capable of getting a top half finish. Top eight, I think, is a bit optimistic because then you're somehow expecting us to finish ahead of Newcastle, who I think we can go toe-to-toe with. You expect us to finish ahead of Newcastle, Villa, Brighton, you know, so that's going to be a difficult task. But if we can have a successful finish, it's laid down the foundations this season of something really, really nice, and hopefully we can kick on next year.
Jord, where can Wolves finish? Can they get the top 10?
I think we can get the top 10. I don't think it defines the season if we do or don't get in the top 10, though. I think before a ball was kicked, I think a lot of us, well, I certainly would have just taken 17th for them in a matter of like the toxicity around the club and what was going on, the carnage before a ball was kicked. I think top 12 is realistic now, for sure. I think top 8 is probably pushing it, but again, I think we can beat any of these teams that you mentioned, that Dave mentioned there, on our day. I'm happy to go against them toe-to-toe. It's just going to be that over a 38-game season, whether we can withstand it and stuff. I think if Fosen back O'Neill in January and maybe bring in one or two more, potentially. But I think we've just got to, you know, we're in a good vein of form at the moment. Naturally, it will swing at some point. We might lose two or three on the bounce, and we've just got to, you know, it'll even itself out a little bit, I think. But yeah, look, he's turned it around really well in the last sort of 5-6 weeks. I think his stock is probably never been so high, especially after the Monday night football chat he had as well. And you know, he's got a lot of time now with Wolves fans. And I think Wolves fans are fully bought into Gary O'Neill now, even those ones that weren't at the time, and can understand why, you know, Matt Hobbs gave him the job when he interviewed, because he's obviously a very articulate man, and he's proven a lot of people wrong.
Yeah, talks with his hands a lot though, doesn't he? gesticulates a lot. when was the last time, George, that you felt Wolves would go toe-to-toe with any side?
Probably the first 2 years of Nuno, I reckon.
Yeah, the Europa League season, we could have beat anyone in the world, man.
Anyone, across
the
legs. That season, yeah, we could have beat anyone for sure. And then it all went to shit. I think I lost all faith and confidence as soon as we lost 3-2 at home to the Baggies. I think that was it then for me. And I haven't enjoyed following the club for a long time, basically. But you know what? I'm starting to get that belief again now. And we're playing some good football as well. So
yeah, we actually are playing some good stuff.
So it's good. It's nice to watch.
Matt Wolf has asked, does Gary O'Neill's need to start using more subs? Only 3 U's in the last 2 matches. I know maybe the depth isn't quite there, but we're risking injuries and suspensions. I purely put that down to trust. I don't think he trusts half the bench, to be honest.
Does he mean 3 different players used in the last 2 matches?
Or I think he just made 3 changes rather than possibly 5.
Oh, is it the 5? Yeah. I think he's, yeah, trust. I think sometimes, as long as you're confident the players are fit enough to fill out the 90, I think, you know, if things are going well, why change it? Why do you need to change it? Mm. And obviously the Neto change was enforced on Saturday as well. But I'm always a little bit like, even when I used to coach, I felt like if a game's going well, even if you're not necessarily winning or the game, but you know you've got the momentum, you can bring a player on and it will completely change the game. I think the forward line is one area that Wolves need to address. Obviously, we've got Kolasinac and Fabio, but no one has the quality on the ball a better quality on the ball than Cunha or Hwang. So I think we do need either like an explosive winger or a really quick nippy winger that, you know, could play there. Ento obviously isn't ready. I think if he was, he would be a great player to maybe, you know, put in there. But I think it is, like you said, just trust and players that he knows at the moment can play a system. I think he's found that with four good central midfielders now. Tommy Doyle offers something that the other guys can't. But Boubacar, João Gomes and Lamina have all proved that they can play there. And same with the wing-backs in the back three. Santi Bueno obviously wasn't fit when he came. Obviously, he isn't good enough. And you know, the back three have every right to keep their place in the team. So when you're unbeaten in five games, you can't just keep chopping and changing it for the sake of it. I think you've got to try and trust the players that are on the pitch.
I would have liked to have seen, you said there about explosive wingers, like us to have gone and got another option like Sulemana at Southampton, obviously gone down.
I saw someone mentioned him yesterday.
Yeah, someone like that who like 1v1 is unbelievable. Might not have the finished product, but it's just another option, isn't there? Because I feel like now Neto's gone, I feel like we may be a little bit easier to play against, obviously, but a bit, I don't know. Just don't think he's going to work as well as he has done.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, and that's why it'd be interesting. Bellegarde, I think he's if he's fit for Saturday, I think in terms of quality, he's got that on the ball. He's obviously not as explosive as Neto, but he's definitely quality. He can bring different players into play. He can beat a man. So that's why it's going to be frustrating, but an interest to see how Gary O'Neill copes with it.
Next question is from Juicy Fruity. It says, Gary O'Neill has already stated his concerns with squad this season. Do you think Fosun will back him this summer? I think Fosun will back him this winter, to be honest. I think the January window.
I'd assume that's what he meant, surely. Yeah.
I can see him bringing like two or three players in. They're not going to be spending like 100 million, but Dave, I think that could be, you know, could be bringing those players in.
I think so as well. I think, I don't know about you boys in terms of positions, what you think, but I think a forward is probably going to be needed. I think players can leave. Fabio Silva, I think, will be moved on, whether that be loan or permanent deal, more than likely a loan, I think, again. But you're bringing another forward, whether that's a wide player, but someone sort of similar to how you described, I think, an explosive winger, really. He raised concerns about fullbacks as well. Johnny's obviously not up to it, so probably forced and try and move Johnny on. And if you can get someone that could play both sides to cover, I think happy days. But I don't know about you, Jordan, in terms of positions where you'd look to bring in as well.
Yeah, and I think Nat, well, it's obvious now Neto's gone down, we are a bit light in that wide area. I think there's potentially, I mean, I was in the summer, I thought we could have gone for someone like Somerville from Leeds.
We were interested in him back in the day before he went to Leeds.
Yeah, if you're looking at someone just to bring in for 6 months or whatever, there's people, and they add a bit of quality, there's people like that. But again, they're on a promotion charge themselves. There might be something we can do with Fabio, maybe. I'm sure he's got his sights on loftier ambitions, but maybe he needs 6 months in the Championship. I don't know what other people think about that, maybe to sort of just prove himself in English football a little bit. He'll go abroad, and I think we'll sell him personally in January. I think we're gone. Same as Sarabia, I think he'll be gone. Fullback's an interesting one, obviously. I know we need more quality, but yeah, I'm actually quite content with the squad as well. Like, I actually feel like we've got options. We need more, and you can never have enough. I feel pretty comfortable at the moment. I think we need another centre half, but is that unfair on Santi Bueno, who's come with a high reputation? We saw him unfit against Ipswich when we were poor. He's a Uruguayan international. He's obviously a player there. You can never have enough quality, but
I think the big test will be around Christmas, because you see like the schedule. I think Gary O'Neill will start to learn a lot more. You're going to have to give minutes to players that probably necessarily haven't got a lot of minutes. So by sort of mid to end of December, I think Matt Hobbs, Gary O'Neill are pretty much going to know where they need to bring players in for.
I think they'll already know, to be honest.
So,
but I think a big positive, though, for us, unlike other clubs, is we won't have many going to AFCON. AFCON's in January again, isn't it? Is that right? And Lamine, they didn't qualify, did they, Gabon? I don't think.
No, so I think it'll be Aitnori will probably go.
Yeah, he will. Car.
Tom King?
I mean, he's just Aitnori and Boubacar.
Yeah,
yeah, I think. I think they'll already have players lined up, to be honest. And there's money to be spent as well. We know that it doesn't take an accountant to work that out. Christian has asked, do you like the fact that the refs and VAR get the crowd going like it did Saturday? Or do you think we should be able to generate our own atmosphere without it? To be honest, I thought the atmosphere was quite good from the get-go. The 5:30 kickoffs help and the late kickoffs because people have a few beers before time. But I don't know about you, lads, but I thought the atmosphere was good regardless.
Yeah, it was good.
I thought it was as well. There was obviously like the 5-10 minutes after the penalty decision where there was obviously the chance about the Premier League and that being corrupt. But other than that, I thought it was good. And I think you can just, you know, when you watch the Juan goal back, I don't know if it's just me, but you listen to like, you just listen to the celebration and think, shit, like, you know, that I haven't heard us roar like for a long, long time. Yeah.
You're right, though. It wasn't as loud, but it was almost like Man United quarterfinal when Jota.
The best when they got like watched it back, you know, just as the ball hits him, you go from really loud to almost silent within like a millisecond, and then it just erupts again.
Absolutely superb. Nice. Career path game, lads.
Come on.
You've had a bit of time off to practice. Jord, that's an earn. That's where you've been.
without
your exploits in Amsterdam, which we won't go into. Do you need reminded with the rules? Or
right.
No, let's go.
Are you happy to crack on?
Let's go.
You both ready?
Yeah. I
think so.
Player number one started his career at Lorient 2 in 2010. And then moved to Lorient first team in 2012 until 2013. He then moved to Marseille B team in 2013 before making his debut at Marseille in 2013. In 2015, he moved to Juventus. He played 29 games.
Mario Lemina.
Oh, Dave was there first. Sorry, Jord.
Oh, that's the lag.
Dave was there first.
Sorry, Jord. The lag. You know, you misplace a pass on pro clubs. Yeah. Oh, I'm lagging.
Ready for player two.
Go on then.
This player started his career at Aston Villa in 1991, where he made 52 appearances. During his spell at Aston Villa, he went on loan to Bromsgrove Rovers, Gloucester City 92-93, Scarborough 93-94. And Tranmere Rovers in 1994. In 1999, he made the switch across the Midlands to Wolverhampton Wanderers, where he played 199 games.
Michael Oakes.
Jord, mate. I put that one in for you because that was your era.
That was like way before my time.
Great goalkeeper. He got done dirty in the 03 season when Paul Jones came in.
He was crap.
He did all right when Matt Murray went down, to be fair. Then they brought in bloody Big Paul Jones, and that was it.
Big Paul Jones. Player number three. You're going to have to be quick on this one, guys, okay?
I'll say.
Jord, I'm going to give you a bit of notice.
Go on.
This player started his career at Wolverhampton Wanderers in 2000, making 212 appearances, scoring 13 goals. He then left the club in 2006, where he joined Everton.
Joelien Lescott. I had a feeling it was going to be Lescott.
George, you're half asleep here, mate.
I didn't realise he scored that many goals for us, to be fair.
Yeah, he scored goals everywhere he's gone. Got 14 for Everton.
I remember him scoring in Euro 2000 and was it 2008 when he scored against France?
Yeah,
the Brew. I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. We did that event, didn't we, Dave?
Yeah.
He ignored Dave.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was mid conversation with him and he just started there going, just started voice noting on WhatsApp. I was doing a podcast and just started voice noting halfway through. I was like, oh, that's sad.
He didn't want to be there, did he?
Nah, bless him.
To be fair, when we did the actual event, he was sound. Like, he was really good value. But backstage, he couldn't give a fuck. to be honest, I don't blame him. Ready for player four?
Yep.
It's getting embarrassing.
It is. This is embarrassing. this player started his career at Christchurch in 1992, where he made zero appearances before leaving for Cambridge United.
Kevin Muscat?
No. George,
here we go.
All right.
George, no!
Shut up, Dave. There you go.
In 1993, he joined Cambridge United, making 145 appearances, scoring 4 goals. During his time at Cambridge, he went on loan to Woking before signing permanently for Sunderland in 1997, where he made 146 appearances, scoring 2 goals.
I know who it is.
During that time, he went on loan to Sheffield United in 1999 before moving to Wolves permanently in 2003. He made 215 appearances for Wolves, scoring 14 goals. During his time at Wolves, he went on loan to Stoke City in 2007, making 4 appearances, and then he retired at Wolves.
Jody Craddock.
Jody Craddock, well done, mate. Clawed back a bit of pride.
I was just making sure then. I was letting it go all the way through. I thought, right, I'm going to listen to the whole career first.
Yeah. Sorry. When you said Christchurch, Dave, did you think Australia?
It's not Australia. I think it's in New Zealand. So that's why it's even more embarrassing.
Yes, yeah, it's in Dorset.
Yeah. Yeah.
Final player. This bloke's had more clubs than a golfer, so let me have a swig of water. Player five started his career at St Mirren in 1995, where he made 31 appearances, scoring 1 goal, before moving to Aarhus Fremad in 1998, where he stayed there for 2 years. He scored 4 goals in 27 appearances. He then made the glamorous move to Stoke City in 2000, where he stayed there for 4 years, making 84 appearances, scoring 15 goals. During his time at Stoke, he went on loan to York, Cheltenham Town, Brighton and Hove Albion. In 2004, he joined Alemannia Aachen, where he made 9 appearances, scoring 0 goals, before making the move to Colchester United in 2005.
Chris Iwolumo.
It's Chris Iwolumo. Right, I'm only about a quarter away from his clubs. St Mirren, Aarhus Fremad, Stoke City, York City, Cheltenham Town, Brighton, Alemannia Aachen, Colchester United, Charlton Athletic, Wolverhampton Wanderers, Bristol City, Burnley, Watford, Notts County, Oldham Athletic, Scunthorpe United, St Johnston, Chester.
Remember his beats for Scotland?
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
Remember when he lasted 24 hours in a Wolves job?
I remember that. Did you remember that?
Yeah, he came as a coach, didn't he?
Under 21's manager, and then the day last.
I didn't know he did that.
Yeah,
like,
he left.
Like, genuinely 24 hours. He preferred to do the old gold club, Mikey Morris.
He must have like done the interview on Zoom and then travelled into work on the first saying, thought, fucking hell, she's far.
Yeah,
yeah, a bit of an odd one. Dave, if you wouldn't mind updating the scores for me, please, just that'd be fantastic.
I've just done it.
You're flying away with this, aren't you, Dave? I need to start making it a little bit tougher. I need players from like the 60s to give Jordan up a hand.
No, to be fair, I would have got the Jody credit one early if I hadn't jumped in, but yeah, I'm doing all right at the minute.
Well done, mate. George, well done on getting the Jody credit one.
Well, I'm taking a 3-2. It's not bad.
And Finn and George are on the same score roughly at the moment.
I'm not taking that, though.
Yeah. Well,
I've said I've got 3. I've got more than 3, haven't I?
No, you got 6. You got 6, but you played double the game. You played 4 games. Finn's only played 2. And got 3.
We're doing it on a points per
game basis.
Yeah.
Finn's under the thumb, isn't he? That's why I don't come on here.
Same as you, is.
I'm here.
Should have knocked at the door. How long are you going to fucking be on that fucking podcast? we better let you get back, mate. I know you're trying to sort things out after Amsterdam and the old debacle with the glizzy goblin. George, where can people find you? Should they wish to follow you? Oh, 1 second. Dave, you've got an announcement. Sleep out.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was going to say, anyway. Yeah, it's just over 2 weeks now to the Molyneux Sleepout. We'll get the guys on from the Wolves Foundation on the podcast at some point in the next week or so. But if anyone wants to contribute towards our fundraising page, I'll make sure I leave a link in the top of the description. If it's a couple of quid, a fiver, obviously, it all goes a really long way. So, yeah, anything you can do to help, thank you.
Yeah, I won't be doing it. Jordy, are you doing it?
I'm on holiday.
Again?
I'm in Malvern this year for the weekend.
Malvern,
yeah.
Sorry, you're going on holiday to Malvern?
Well, say I'm holiday. I'm going...
Is that like Essex way?
Malvern? It's Worcestershire.
Worcester?
Oh, I'm thinking that there's another Malvern. I'm thinking of that.
In the Malvern Hills? Yeah, didn't Malvern.
Oh, never
really. Hard work, that.
Yeah, so I'm there for like a long weekend in like a log cabin. So
nice.
I will be donating. It's obviously a fantastic cause.
After his bet, mate, when he comes in.
I feel like I'm avoiding it because I missed it last year as well. But I definitely will be there next year. I'm going to put it in my calendar when we get there.
I think we were quite lucky with the weather last year because even though it was like fairly late in the year, it was still quite warm considering, weren't it, Dave?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Yeah, I actually got some sleep until people just laughing and talking well loud at like 4 in the morning. I was like,
Gary Poundland snoring.
Yeah, that was bad.
Oh.
You messaged me yesterday saying, hey, can he stick with us? I was like, yeah, sound, as long as you don't sleep by me. That's sound, mate. So
he's funny, man. Yeah. He had a good time last night. Hopefully, get some more donations in for you, Dave. I've already donated. I've done my bit, especially if I'm not there. But yeah, George, where can people find you, mate? Should they? We're sorry for cutting you off. I know it was a very important message.
That's far more important than where to find me. So yeah, George7 at Twitter and Instagram.
Dave, where can people find you, should they wish?
At Dave Has a Party on YouTube. Not
Tinder,
Hinge. Yeah. Dave Has a Party on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch as well. I'll be playing a lot of Football Manager, so if you want to come watch me on Twitch, then yeah, feel free to do so.
Bumble as well.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I forgot about Bumble. Plenty of Fish.
Grindr, yeah, all of them.
How are you getting on with the streaming, mate? I saw that you qualified for the Champions League.
Oh, mate, I almost signed Messi today as well. I've been trying to get rid of Guedes and Podence all summer and no one wants them. And I need 10 million on deadline day to sign Messi and I couldn't get it and it fell through.
You need the in-game editor, that's what you need.
So it's not out yet. So.
Is it not?
Nah, it only comes out when the full game's out.
So. Oh, you're an FM purist as well, aren't you? I bet you'd never touch that.
Nah, never, mate.
Never. When do you reckon you're going to get the job at Wolves doing the FM videos, mate?
Banta.
They stopped doing them, haven't they?
Yeah, it was only an experiment, apparently.
We're met by a lot of backlash from the Twitter army. Why isn't that time doing that? Because he's shit, that's why. He uses the in-game editor. Matt Cooper Bites on Twitter and M Cooper writes, we are Talking Wolves across all socials. Don't forget to follow Green King Sport on Instagram as well. You'll be doing us a huge favour. If you've enjoyed it, let us know in the comments down below. Like the video. If you haven't subscribed, please do. It means the world to us. And yeah, hopefully, the lads, I won't be here, but we'll be discussing a massive 3 points on the road at Bramall Lane. Hopefully Finn will be back for that one as well. He can come out of hiding because we don't know where he is. Come out from under the thumb. If Jor can do it, so can Finn. But until next time, take care. See you later.